This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Garrett Sutton back to the show. He is founder of the Sutton Law Center, owner of CorporateDirect.com, and of course, you've probably heard his name most famously because he is a rich dad advisor to Robert Kiyosaki and author of Loopholes of Real Estate, which is just a fantastic book, just was translated into Spanish, and it's a pleasure to have Garrett back. Garrett, welcome. How are you?
Good. Thanks, Jason, for having me back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Where are you located today, Wyoming or Reno?
I'm in Reno, Nevada today, and it's a beautiful day here.
Good stuff. Well, all of you lawyers always live in these very favorable, smart states.
Right.
Just out of curiosity, did you strategically locate there, or were you raised in Nevada? Or?
No, I grew up in the California, in the Bay Area. Went to Cal and Hastings Law School in San Francisco, but California just got too crowded and too regulatory, and so I moved up here in 1989.
California, well, you know, I left California about 3.5 years ago, and I always say, I swear, Garrett, that state does not want me to employ anybody or have any businesses.
Well, it's gotten even worse. So if we have time, we can talk about some of California's new rules with regard to corporations.
Gosh, okay. Well, yeah, let's try and touch on that if we can. But one of the new things, and, you know, we're going to talk a lot about real estate investing and so forth, but one of the new things I just wanted to kind of get out of the way, it may not be super applicable to real estate investors, is there is a new type of corporation, right? I mean, in the past, we've always known there's a C-Corp and an S-Corp. And how long has it been since they made a new one? This has got to be kind of groundbreaking, right?
Well, yeah, we had the LLC about 30 years ago, but now we have the B-Corp or the Benefit Corporation. And they're allowed in, I think, 27 states. All 50 states will have them. And it's a really interesting idea, Jason. And the idea is that you can have a corporation that not only makes money, you know, has profits, but can also benefit certain activities. Before, to do charitable work and social purpose work, you had to use a 501c3, an organization that was approved by the IRS as a nonprofit organization. The problem with the nonprofit was you couldn't pay the adequate salaries to get the work done by efficient people. So they've come up with the B Corp, which allows you to not only make profits, but to provide low-income or underserved individuals with beneficial products or services, preserve the environment, improve human health. There are all these categories that you can fit in, and you don't... Under regular corporate law, C Corp and S Corp, under regular corporate law, you have a duty to the shareholders to make as much money as possible. You can't leave money on the table. With the B Corp, you don't have to make every last penny for the benefit of the shareholders. You can have profits, but at the same time, provide services at a discounted rate so that you're not maximizing shareholder profit, but you're providing a public service as well. And so that's what the B Corp is. It's really interesting. It's been around for 5 years. It started in Maryland. But to be honest, Jason, we haven't had that much of a call for it. There are a few B Corps out there, but it's not like there's this surge towards people starting as a B Corp. I think part of it is people just aren't aware of this new entity.
This is really most appropriate, or maybe just appropriate, for nonprofits then?
Well, it kind of fits in between nonprofit and social purpose where you're trying to make a profit. So, yes, it's for people that want to do good in the community, but they don't want to be restricted by the nonprofit rules. They want to operate as a corporation. They want to pay full salaries. They want to be able to go out and do activities on a corporate basis as opposed to a nonprofit basis. But they don't have to make every last dollar for the benefit of the shareholders. That's the key here.
Well, yeah, I mean, doesn't that just fall under what's known as the business judgment rule? I mean, if a nonprofit, and, you know, there's been a lot of debate about this stuff, about, you know, salaries with the ALS, the bucket challenge, and, you know, the way that company, I guess I'll call it a company, that nonprofit is managed, and you know, like the head of the United Way in the past, I remember hearing complaints about, you know, oh, this person's making like, you know, $700,000 or $1 million a year or something, and everybody thought that was ridiculous. But, you know, I don't know. I have a hard time reconciling that kind of stuff because, you know, number one, that's a huge organization. And I mean, if you want to attract a talented person who's going to make it grow, you know, they can go out in the private world and get a job as a Wall Street crook and make a fortune.
Well, exactly right, Jason. The B Corp kind of solves that problem. You can have someone engaged in social purpose activity, but pay him that salary that the private sector would pay him anyway.
Hmm, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Because I have a foundation. I mean, it was set up about 10 years ago, and I never heard anything about a B Corp until I saw it on your website recently. So interesting point. Okay, good. And the whole doing good thing, I mean, isn't that a really big question mark? A capitalist and an Adam Smith fan would always argue that every company does, you know, good, right? I mean, you know, that we hear a lot about social entrepreneurship nowadays. So just any comments on that before we switch gears here?
Well, yeah, Josh and Lisa Lannon, Rich Dad Advisors, wrote a book on social capitalism, and it talks about the B Corp in there. Actually, I wrote the section in the book. And there are a lot of people out there who want to use capitalism to solve social problems. And so the B Corp is kind of the hybrid entity that allows you to do that.
Hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, good. Well, you mentioned before that there have been some new regulations people need to be aware of. And, you know, maybe you want to just talk a little bit, Garrett, kind of as a review. You were on the show before, of course. People can go find that old episode, of course, on iTunes or at jasonhartman.com. But you talked before about Nevada and Wyoming and those being really the most favorable asset protection states for entities. I mean, not, there's more to asset protection than just entities. There's homesteading and all that kind of good stuff too. But take it away with whatever you'd like to discuss.
Well, since we spoke, Jason, there has been this trend around the country where the courts are not protecting single-member LLCs as much. And I went back and looked at the old podcast, and we did talk a lot about how LLCs offer great asset protection for both business and real estate. And the benefit of the LLC is the charging order protection. And that basically says, if you, Jason, get in a car wreck and someone wants to get at your other assets, if they're making an outside attack, they want to get at your various assets. It has nothing to do with the real estate in the LLC. It's not a tenant suing you on an inside attack. It's someone coming after you after a car wreck. Well, the charging order protection says if you're going to come after Jason, you don't get to sell his fourplex. Now, California law does say that, but the good states, the strong states like Nevada and Wyoming, say you have to wait for distributions to be made. If the fourplex has money that it's going to distribute to Jason, then you stand in Jason's shoes and get distributions. And that's really good asset protection. And since we spoke, Jason, there are five states that protect single-member LLCs. It's Nevada, Wyoming, and now Alaska, Delaware, and South Dakota also protect the single-member LLC. But the trend across the country is for courts to say, we're not going to protect the single-member LLC. For example, in California, the state will say, if you have a single member LLC, the original purpose of the charging order was to protect the other partner in the LLC. So Jason gets in a car wreck and his partner Sue is also an owner of this LLC. It's not fair to Sue to allow someone to go in and sell the fourplex so that Jason's creditor can get paid. Well, you don't have that scenario with a single member LLC. With a single member LLC, there's only one partner to protect, and the courts have said it's not fair to the car wreck victim to let Jason not pay this judgment if it's a single member LLC. So there's kind of an understandable rationale behind these courts saying we're not going to protect a single member LLC. And so in California, in all cases in California, they won't protect a single member LLC. In Colorado, in a bankruptcy case, they won't protect a single member LLC. Same with Montana and Kansas. So this, and in Florida, the big case was the Olmstead case in Florida several years ago, where the Florida Supreme Court, they had protected people in LLCs with the charging order, and then out of the blue, the Florida Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to protect a single member LLC. So Jason, that trend is spreading across the country. So a lot of our clients are looking at setting up multiple member LLCs. So you have the argument, well, it's not a single member LLC. There are two people involved here. The charging order needs to protect the second partner. So the law is a dynamic area. Things change, and it's good that we're doing an update now because this is changing across the country.
So, Garrett, do I hear that you're saying you're afraid Wyoming, which has been the desirable state, could go this way? Has there been any case law so far?
Yeah, Wyoming had a recent case, the Greenhunter case, where they pierced the LLC veil on a single-member LLC. And so that shook a lot of people up. Nevada, in a bankruptcy case on a single-member LLC, the bankruptcy court in Nevada did not protect the single member. So, you know, we have the single-member LLC somewhat under attack, and clients are starting to think about, and I need to start doing the writing, because this has just happened. The Nevada and Wyoming case are just in the last couple of months. So people are starting to think about using multiple member LLCs. So that's kind of the trend out there.
Now, here is the million-dollar question. Does that member need to be a natural person, or can it be another entity that you own? Like, can you have, you know, one of your LLCs, can you have them owning each other is what I'm saying? Because, you know, for example, in my case, I don't have that many relatives, you know, or people that I'd necessarily want to make members. You know, I mean, I got some, but I mean, how do you do that? There's family strife out there. I mean, you know, there's parents that don't want their, you know, that think their kids will mismanage things and are very concerned about that. Heck, they set up whole elaborate estate plans over that issue of doling out money slowly or giving it to someone else in some cases, you know.
Well, actually, that's a really good question, Jason, because, you know, I have clients that say, look, I own this LLC myself. I'm going to keep it as a single member LLC. I have enough insurance. I'm not worried about a car wreck attack. So some people are going to stick with the single member LLC and, you know, they'll be fine. The issue of whether you can have a second LLC be a 5% member is a good one. I would think that if that LLC was owned 100% by you, and you owned the remaining interest in the LLC under attack, that might not work. Now, if that second LLC, though, was owned 80% by Jason and 20% by a nephew, you may have an argument there. What a lot of people are doing is they will set up a Nevada Asset Protection Trust to be an owner of the LLC and then have themselves be a 5% owner of that LLC as well. You have two separate members at that point. Jason is one member as an individual, and Jason's Nevada Asset Protection Trust, a spendthrift irrevocable trust, is the second member. So in many cases, that could work. We also have clients that will just set up, you know, not an expensive Nevada Asset Protection Trust, but more of a garden variety irrevocable trust for their kids, and have that trust own 5% and the parents own 95%. That could work as well.
So is there a certain percentage that's ideal? By the way, you instantly jump to the number 5%, and then I think you also mentioned 20%. Is there a right number, like a percentage number that, you know, if you own 0.1%, is that really having another owner? I mean, if I were the judge, I might say no, you know?
Right. And in the legal community, most people say that, you know, 5% is the right number. You know, like you say, 0.1% probably isn't a significant enough membership interest for a court to say that it's a multiple member LLC. 5%, most people in the legal field feel that 5% is a justifiable number.
Okay, so 5%. All right. So that's what you do. And what kind of trust is the ideal trust to have? Is it a spendthrift trust? You know, and maybe, can you talk a little, we haven't done much at all about trust. I don't understand them very well. You know, I have two of them, but I can't say I have a big understanding of this area. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, trusts have been around for over 1,000 years. The Romans used trusts. So the trust is a very time-tested instrument. And basically, you have a trust. It's set up by a grantor or a settlor. Someone puts assets into the trust. The trust is managed by a trustee for the benefit of a beneficiary. So the beneficiary is like a shareholder in a corporation. The trust is managed for their benefit. The trustee has power over the trust. It gets to manage all the trust assets, and that's why you have banks serving in this capacity as trustees, and the banks typically charge a very healthy fee for this. But they will...
What's a healthy fee? Can you give us an example?
Well, some banks will charge a minimum of $5,000 plus 1% under management. That would be something. On a large trust, that could be a significant amount of money. So you will have people operate as trustees, and their job is to manage the trust. But when someone sues the beneficiary, the person who the trust was set up for, the beneficiary can say, look, I don't manage this money. You know, you say I owe you money, but I'm a beneficial owner of this trust, but I can't go in and give you money because the trustee manages everything. It's their decision whether or not to give you any money. And of course, the trustee, when the beneficiary gets sued, does not have to make payments to that creditor. So that's where the asset protection comes in. There's also a trust called a living trust or a revocable trust.
And that doesn't offer any asset protection, though, does it?
No, zero asset protection, although there are promoters out there saying it does. Just know that the living trust...
Be careful.
Yeah. The living trust is really good for probate avoidance. That's why you set it up. Without a living trust, if your assets are held in your individual name, when you pass, you have to go to probate court, and the court supervises the distribution of your assets. And the attorneys make out quite well on the probate fees. So, for example, if you had a $1 million house in California, and even if there was $900,000 in loans against it, the court, when you distribute that trust through probate, awards the attorneys $20,000 in legal fees. Now, you can set up a living trust and avoid that whole procedure for $2,000 or $2,500. So the living trust makes a lot of sense, but it's important, as you mentioned, Jason, it doesn't offer asset protection.
You mentioned earlier, Garrett, about California. You know, it seems that as I do business all over the country, it's always like there are laws, and then when it comes to like California and New York, there's a bunch of special extra laws. and I mean, no one can keep track of all this stuff. It's completely impossible. I think New Year's just this last year, and pretty much every year it's a similar type of number, there were something like 800 or 900 new laws in the Socialist Republic of California, my former home state. It's just crazy. I don't even know what to think about that state.
Well, get this one, Jason. This is one of the new ones that has a lot of people upset. We have clients in Utah, and they have a Utah LLC. They live in Utah. They have a California LLC, so they have a duplex in California. And they pay the $800 a year for that California LLC. Now, we like to have the California LLC be owned by a Wyoming LLC, right, for the better asset protection. California has the worst laws in the country for asset protection. Wyoming has still one of the best. So we have a California LLC paying the $800 a year, a Wyoming LLC paying $50 a year in the state of Wyoming, and these Utah residents. The state of California has come to them and said, because you have California money flowing from California through Wyoming to you in Utah, you have to pay the state of California $800 a year for the Wyoming LLC. And they don't even live in the state of California. And this has them selling the California property. They said, we're not paying $800 a year for an entity that is completely outside California, and we're not going to be a part of this. But if you're going to invest in California from outside the state of California, you need to know these new rules that are in effect.
Well, when it comes to real estate, I mean, I don't know why you'd invest in California anyway. The rent-to-value ratios never make any sense. I mean, you know, if you're buying properties in California, that's really a speculator's game. That's a gambler's game. You're just looking for appreciation. You definitely can't make your money on cash flow. And it's funny, I talk about California as though it's a city, but it's like that rule applies to the whole state. I mean, you can't even make a deal work in Bakersfield or Fresno, really. You know, it just doesn't work anywhere. The numbers just do not work in California. If you live there, if you have to live there, you're better off being a renter because you'll get the benefit of that fantastic rent-to-value ratio, or RV ratio, as I call it. And, you know, investing around the country, unless you're just a gambler, if you're a speculator and you're looking for appreciation only, then hey, have at it.
Well, yeah, and let's talk about the reverse situation. Say you're a California resident and you have a Utah LLC that owns property in Utah.
That's the more common, or not even Utah, but maybe Texas or one of the desirable.
Wherever, whatever state it is. All right, so you have a Utah property and a Utah LLC, or a Texas property and a Texas LLC, and that money flows, the profits flow through to you in California. You're going to pay tax on that. But now California says, because you have, let's say, a Texas LLC that you manage from California, the Texas LLC is thus doing business in the state of California because you're managing it there from California. Pay us $800 a year there. And so, you know, I have clients living in the state of California who just got hit with this a year ago, and, you know, some of them are considering leaving. It's just when you talk to people at the Franchise Tax Board on this, and I call them up and I said, look, I'm just trying to understand your new rules so I can advise my clients. But when you talk to them, this is clearly about their salaries and pensions. You know, these people at the state of California are putting in these rules. I don't even think the state legislature realizes what the Franchise Tax Board is doing. But they're putting in these rules to collect $800 wherever they can. And it's really by a bureaucracy that's trying to maintain their salaries and pensions.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, you know, California is just a really corrupt place. You know, it's annoying. But, you know, I got to say, you mentioned the $800 that you have to pay the state of California if you've got any entity there. But, you know, really, in the big picture, I mean, that's kind of, it's an annoyance for sure compared to $50 in Wyoming. But if you're talking, you know, the big game, $800 is nothing but an annoyance. It's a mosquito bite, right? It's not that big a deal. The more important thing is probably the fact that you're just not going to have any protection. And one of the things that gets complicated about this stuff, and I'm far from understanding it myself, is that you're doing business in all these states and so forth, and you have to domesticate entities in various states. And once you do that, it sort of doesn't matter what the laws are in, say, Wyoming or Nevada, if those are the examples. It matters where you domesticate it, right? As soon as you domesticate or do business in that state, Are you subject to that state's rules and Wyoming is thrown out the window? Or I don't know. I don't understand it.
Well, here's how it works. For California, let's set that aside. And you're right. I've talked to people in California and they feel like I'm willing to pay $800. You know, I can make money in California. The $800 is an annoyance. Fine, I'll pay it. And that's fine. But people need to realize that if you don't pay the $800, the penalty is $12,000. So I just have to counsel all my clients on this penalty. Yeah. Now, let's talk about if you have a Texas LLC. Texas law is pretty good. So if your tenant sues you in Texas, you are subject to Texas law. If you have the Texas LLC owned by a Wyoming LLC and someone in the car wreck case comes after you, you know, we don't have any laws in Texas or California on this, but under the current law, if you set up the Wyoming LLC for that protection, Wyoming law applies. And so that's why we like to have all, yeah, that's good. We like to have all these entities form. If you own real estate in South Carolina, we use a South Carolina LLC because South Carolina law is going to apply. But then we have it owned by a Wyoming or Nevada LLC.
It gets complicated as heck, though, doesn't it? Managing all the entities and stuff in different states. And
well, we provide a service, and we do that for people. You know, you just have to build a team. And, you know, we provide the asset protection and the corporate maintenance. And that's part of our job to be on your team. And so, you know, in the past, we've given all your listeners $100 off on the formation of an entity or an LLC. We still honor that. And so we've had a great experience with a lot of your listeners, Jason. And, you know, it's just we're part of your team. We help you manage all that.
What about some of those requirements? You got to have a registered agent in every state, right?
Right.
Do you want to say anything about that, how that goes around the country? And then I just want to ask you, you know, about maybe two more states before we wrap up.
Sure. So the resident agent or registered agent is required if you have, if say you've set up in Wyoming, you have to have a registered agent in Wyoming, and that's free the first year with us, and then we charge $125 a year thereafter. Now, if you take that Wyoming entity and qualify it to do business in New Mexico, you have to have a resident agent also in New Mexico. So one entity formed in Nevada doing business in New Mexico requires two registered agents. So that's how it works. And the idea, the registered agent's job is to accept service of process, meaning a lawsuit. And so you want a registered agent who appreciates the importance of getting the filing, the paperwork from the lawsuit to you promptly, because you've only got, in most states, 30 days to answer a complaint. So you want someone who's going to get that information to you pronto so that you can start working on filing an answer to the complaint.
Garrett, I've heard some things, and this may not be your area because I know every attorney has their favorites, but you know, we've all heard good things about Delaware. Generally speaking, I think that applies to larger companies. A lot of them, you'll notice, are registered in Delaware. And then also, oddly, Alaska. I've heard a lot about Alaska lately. Any comments on those two?
Sure. Delaware is where most of the Fortune 500 companies are. They have a strong body of case law on corporate law. They have a separate court for corporate matters. So does Nevada now. But in a lot of cases, the venture capitalists are familiar with Delaware law, and it's almost kind of like it's their comfort zone. They just feel like they're comfortable with Delaware. And so you'll have situations where you're trying to get funded with a company and your venture capitalists will say, well, you have to be incorporated in Delaware. And if you want their money, you'll do it. I personally don't like Delaware when compared to Nevada and Wyoming because there are more reporting requirements. You have to provide them with more information than you do in Nevada or Wyoming, and as well...
Wyoming, though, interestingly, you have to give them your bank balance, I think, right?
No, we don't. If you have money at work in the state of Wyoming, over $1 million, there's a little franchise fee, but most of our clients don't do that. Don't hold that much money in the state of Wyoming. With Delaware, the filing fees are a little higher. You're right about Alaska. Alaska just took the step of protecting single-member LLCs like Nevada and Wyoming did. So Alaska also pioneered the Asset Protection Trust, although Nevada made its law a little bit more appealing than Alaska did when it came out with its Asset Protection Trust. In Nevada, the assets are bulletproof after 2 years of being held in the trust. In Alaska, it's 3 years. So you just have a shorter time period in Nevada. But you're right, Jason. Alaska is becoming a popular state for incorporations as well.
Good stuff. Well, Garrett, please give out your website. Tell people where they can find you. Thank you, by the way, for offering that discount to my listeners. I really appreciate that.
Sure. So the website is sutlaw.com, sutlaw.com. And if you request a consultation or information, we'll be happy to get that to you. And just mention Jason's name, and we'll give you the $100 off the formation fee. So instead of $695, which includes everything except the state filing fees, which vary from state to state. So instead of $695, it's $595. And you can actually talk to someone on the phone when we're helping you out with these entities. So we'd be happy to work with your listeners, Jason.
Yeah, good stuff. And then the other thing that they need to do is maintain their entity, correct, and do the reporting, the annual reporting. How much does that cost, Garrett?
Well, we charge $125 to be the resident agent, and we provide that service in all 50 states. And then if you want us to prepare the minutes every year, you are required to do minutes once a year. We charge $150 to do that.
Okay, so $275, yeah.
$275, right. And when you form with us, we give you a book on how to do all this and the importance of corporate formalities. So your first entity, we provide you with a book that shows you how to do it. If you want us to do it, we can.
Garrett, any final words about, you know, asset protection or, you know, on the tax side? I mean, I know you're not an accountant, but certainly you have to be a little bit versed on the tax issues too. You know, if there are any thoughts there, just in closing.
Well, in closing, I would say that the law is a dynamic area. And in this discussion, we talked about how things are changing with regard to single member LLCs. So I think it's important for people to stay up to date, to have advisors that are keeping an eye out for you on these legal changes. The other thing is that a lot of people like to do this themselves, and I just see people get into problems. You know, they put real estate into a C corp because they don't know any better, or they don't follow the requirements, the corporate formalities, and they get their veil pierced, and that happens 50% of the time. So you just want to have a member on your team that can assist you with these important corporate formalities. So we would love to work with anybody who is interested in having that type of ongoing protection.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Garrett Sutton, thank you so much for joining us again and for that generous offer to our listeners. We really appreciate your insights and your thoughts about this very important topic. So thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.